Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Creams and serums are made of 70% water, 15% preservatives and emulsifiers, leaving only around 15% for the active ingredients that your skin needs. But luckily now, there's Fiber Skincare.
15 years ago, the scientists behind Fiber Skincare started working on nanofibers, which are 500 times smaller than human hair. You know, I saw that in Three Body Problem. Mm. 1 year ago, they patented a way of wrapping the nanofiber around oil or liquid-based ingredients. This means they can deliver 5 times the active ingredients compared to creams or serums, as there is no need for water, preservatives, or emulsifiers.
The first formulation made with this technology is plant-based, anti-wrinkle. It's a set of patches that you use over a series of 7 days. You just put these on whenever you would apply your serums, and your skin is going to feel tighter in 10 seconds. And over the seven-day program, it has been clinically proven to reduce wrinkles by, get this, 19.4%, a very precise percentage. In fact, they have a tighter skin guarantee. If your skin isn't tighter in 7 days, they're going to give you your money back, no questions asked.
You get the tighter skin guarantee with this 7-day routine. Tighter skin or your money back. Get a 15% discount code by using the discount code GAME. That's Fiber Skincare.
It's the Game of Roses. Welcome to the Game of Roses. This is the Game of Roses.
This is kind of a trip to sit down with you guys.
I know.
I don't usually do that on the show.
First time.
I'm usually with the guy, you know, and it's been an amazing journey, and it's taken me to places which I never would have been. And I know everybody, and now, like, I go to some of the reunions,
yeah.
And then all the girls, they go like, hey, Neil, look at that, you know, look at that. And I said, wow. And now they have babies.
I
think Catherine and Sean have 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kept in contact with them, an amazing couple. And now here with you guys. And I wish you, like, lots of success.
Welcome to Game of Roses. This is Pace Case.
This is Bachelor Clues.
Wowie Clues. A fantasy suites from hell. I mean, La Quinta.
Worse than hometowns, in my opinion. But just before we get into this, it's good to have you back, Pace Case. We missed you here in the gore pit on Friday, but you were off doing important work, other gore business that needed tending to.
Yes, I decided that I couldn't take on a 4-episode podcast week, and yet here I am. We're doing a 4-episode podcast week, and it's Christmas week this week. I'm starting to get in the holiday spirit, and during some of my insomnia this week, I wrote a little Christmas gift for you, Clues, which I will present to you at the end of this episode.
I am flabbergasted. I can't wait for whatever this Christmas gift is. And I really, truly hope that it makes up for how fucking miserable this episode was of The Bachelorette.
I mean, I didn't make it. I found it deep in the pit.
Well, thanks everybody for slogging through this season. Pace Case and I were just talking about this tonight as we were watching this show. This season really is historic in many ways. And now we are starting to see that perhaps one of the biggest ways is that it's terrible. The end of this is a train wreck that is completely boring. Every twist they try to throw at us, you see coming a mile away. Tonight, Ben came back. It was like, okay, we knew that was fucking happening. Absolutely no drama whatsoever. There's no competition between the guys. The end of it playoffs forward so far, falling very flat.
I mean, if they wanted drama, don't put Ben LL4ing in your promos from last week. We knew it was going to happen. We didn't see that footage.
All this season, they have blown their own secrets in their promos, in the shit they're putting on Instagram. They just have spoiled the entire season for us anyway. It's just been a bad season. I mean, let's be real. Some very historically important things, some things in terms of cultural significance. Incredible. Some of the best we've ever seen. But does that come at the cost of the drama that we like? The twists and the turns?
I would argue that it's not. I would argue that both of those are related to COVID. They are getting into the BLM stuff due to the Black Lives Matter movement resurgence this year. And all the production value is totally shitty because of COVID and they're filming in quarantine. And I don't think... I think we could still have a season where you get those really emotional, in-depth, important conversations and have twists and turns. I think we could have that.
Hopefully that'll be Matt James' season, because it ain't this one. While we have to applaud the producers in the show for including many of the conversations we never thought we'd see in this show about race, about mental health, about suicide, very serious subjects that are affecting countless people in America right now and globally.
More now than ever.
That's all been very good. But these hometowns, these fantasy suites, miserable. With that said, let's get into it. And now, Pace Case and Bachelor Clues proudly present analysis of play in this week of our beloved game. This is Game of Roses.
We start with a wonderful voiceover by Dark Lord Harrison, DLH. He says, will Tayshia finally find her soulmate, or will she lose her chance at love forever? This false dichotomy right off the bat.
That's always how they position this. Pace Case and I did the Hyper Binge. We watched every episode of The Bachelor front to back, episode 1, season 1, to episode 13, season 24. That's how
except
they do.
Except for 9.
Except for some 9 episodes. We did watch the first episode of 9, but we didn't see the rest of the season. At any rate, all of the bumpers that Dark Lord Harrison does in every season always say shit like this. Will this person find the love of their life or be destroyed for all time? That's always what they're positioning here. As though love cannot be found outside the game.
Or it's positioning it as, will she end up with him or will she lose her chance to marry a doctor forever? But we see Tayshia pondering on her balcony. She's riding the Hive hometowns and the guys are pondering on a daybed, on the fountain, etc. They have this awkward conversation in the rec room of the top 3 guys. Brandon says fantasy suites are especially important for him because it would be his second marriage. And Zach says, yeah, I don't think there's anybody who wants to stack divorces. Zach is like, he's coming in with some one-liners. He's doing a little colorful narrator turn this episode, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, it was an interesting turn of a phrase. What I really took from this scene was that there is no element at all of competition amongst these guys. They're just like chilling out, like, yep, it's a little weird. Here we are, huh? And I don't know if this, again, we talked about this on Hometowns where they all hugged after they are selected as the final 3 in the end of it. I don't know if it's because they've had to go through this crazy compressed situation where they're all locked down in La Quinta and it has forged some kind of a closer bond between them that prohibits what would normally be a competitive adversarial relationship, or if it's just that these guys are kind of nicer guys than they've ever cast. I don't know what the truth of it is, but there's a big element that is missing from these final 3 guys, and it's the aggression.
Talking
it is the competition
element.
Yeah,
you don't have the I'm thinking of Hannah Sluice, Madison Pruitt, Victoria Fuller, you have the other two besides Madison talking shit about how Madison's not going to fuck mm-hmm. and how she gave the ultimatum to PP.
Remember when Luke P came back on Hannah Brown's season and Tyler Cameron, Jed, and PP fucking like muscled up on him? Do you remember that shit?
Yeah.
They were going to kick his fucking
and
ass.
And Hannah moved the rose pedestal. Hashtag feminism.
We're getting none of that here. None of that. Now it's just bros fist bumping and doing hugs.
Yeah, they didn't. I mean, you really need more aggressive characters to make it farther. I mean, when is the last aggressive player that we lost?
Yosef.
God. I don't miss him. I don't wish he was in this final three.
No, I mean, Bennett and Noah certainly fulfilled that role. That was kind of the last taste of it we got, I suppose. Then we go back to Tayshia's room where Yo-Yo-Yo has materialized once more, and once more, she has a plate set before her. A giant plate full of countless rolls, donuts, and danishes. And of course, none of them are touched. Once again, Tayshia has supposedly laid out this glorious breakfast food spread for Joe, and not touched, just sits there.
The scone zone is back, baby. Jojo, and Tayshia have more scone zone talks, talk about moving, jobs, kids. That's Jojo's advice for fantasy suites.
And Tayshia says something interesting here. She says it's good to have Jojo back for one last, in quotes, girl chat. This is a phrase used by producers to describe any moment where they are forcing women together to have specific conversations about whatever their dramatic line might be for that episode. So this can refer to what you see here, which is technically a Council of the Crown, where you have two bachelorettes talking to each other. Or it can refer to any time you have multiple female players talking about another player or a date or anything like that. If it's women talking, it is girl chat. If it is guys doing it, it's guy chat. And here she's using the language right in the document, and the producers put it right in as well.
This season we'll have had the most Counts of Crowns we've ever seen. We had Deanna Pappas, we had JoJo, and we're going to have Rachel Lindsay.
We had double JoJo too.
JoJo, of course, relays her experiences. Fantasy Suites took all my relationships to that next level. It is so rewarding when you get to the end and it's so clear who you're supposed to be with. Obviously, a Robo. Back at the rec center, DLH enters. He tells the guys, wow, 31 players down to 3. Congratulations. And he lays in that they're going to have these foregoing conversations where you're going to choose whether you forego your individual room or if you're going to fuck slash realize if you're ready for an engagement.
And he delivers the first fantasy suite date card.
You don't normally see fantasy suite date cards because usually the guys are not all together.
The first date card is for Ivan. It says, our love is timeless and he is granted this gift by the producers of first entry. He pumps his fist, he smiles, and he says he's going to make the most of it.
I called it that he would be first. Because I think they want the first one to be not the person that she's most excited about, so that she's more likely to do overnights with more of them.
That's totally possible. You did call this right on the fucking money. And Ivan leaves to get ready for his date. And then Zach and Brendan kind of laugh about it. Brendan is like, it's weird to not have the first fantasy suite. And Zach ITMs that he trusts what he and Tayshia has. And he says that it's not about what Ivan and Tayshia or Brendan and Tayshia. It's about Tayshia, period. But again, we get this moment after Ivan leaves to go on this date where Zach and Brendan just are kind of laughing about it.
There Zach says, I would let my sister date him. It's all
incredible.
Love.
Not only do they have no animosity, they're actually supportive of one another in this endeavor in which they're actually competitors, but they don't seem to be at all.
Then we get to the day portion of Ivan's fantasy suite date. He loads love level 3, says, I am falling in love with Tayshia. Would you count this as a hooju?
Absolutely not. There were no hoojus in any of these fantasy suite dates. This was Ivan.
I'm going to backspace that. Take that out of the data.
This was Ivan running up to her, slow jog. She waits for him, hugs him, and then he kind of lifts her up and she lifts a couple of legs off the ground. There's no running. There's no jumping. There's barely hugging here. It was a travesty.
All right.
But she mentions that he's sweaty and she says she has a way to cool them off. And she takes him to this little station where there are two ice baths. And then she pulls a sheet off a big sign that reads, the world's longest, coldest kiss. Now, there is a tradition of Guinness record kisses on this show. Carly Waddell and Evan Bass have the longest habanero pepper kiss, which they performed in season 5 of Paradise, I think, or season 4 maybe.
Sean Lowe and Leslie Murphy on their one-on-one date in season 17 of Bachelor did the longest on-screen kiss.
This idea of breaking kissing records is deep in the veins of this game, and here we see it coming out again in a stranger form. They're going to have
to sit in form.
Ice bath. I would argue the habanero pepper kiss was also a torturous form. I would even argue the on-screen thing is torturous. To have to stand there, even if you're not dunked in ice or fucking filling your face with habanero peppers, to have to like have your lips touching someone's face for fucking 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes, that's a little crazy.
As DLH says, if this relationship's gonna last, we gotta put it to the test. You gotta. This is just how you make love. Carly and Evan have had kids together. Leslie Murphy, I don't know. I think she got a hometown.
So we know it works. The kiss contest definitely fosters love. So DLH emerges to tell them the rules of this. He, by the way, is wearing a full blazer and not sweating at all. Tell me how that's possible. He is the devil. So he tells them the record for the longest, coldest kiss stands at 5 minutes and 16 seconds, which immediately makes me wonder who the fuck has that record and who the fuck would ever even think to do this. But two other motherfuckers set, I guess, in ice baths for 5 minutes and 16 seconds prior to this at some point in the world, and it was recorded.
I mean, there's a polar bear plunge community. People love to do this. So it doesn't surprise me that people would make it sexual as well.
So they go to get changed, and they're going to get in the tanks. And then we have this other kind of low-rent thing that gets tacked into this date. DLH brings out Big Polly, who's kind of a utility player from the production staff. He's kind of like a do-anything, right-hand man type of guy. He has appeared in other episodes, other seasons.
Yeah, he's opening limo doors, etc. DLH pulled him up in a tag of one of their reunion specials.
And Big Polly is going to basically be playing the Fred Willard to DLH in what is a completely unnecessary judging of this event. So Tayshia and Ivan come out, they get in the tubs, it's very cold, they've got crazy looks on their face, this is uncomfortable, oh my god, I can't believe we're doing this, we can accomplish anything. And DLH is then forced to do the strange narration of the event, and he engages Big Polly in what I think was the strangest moment of this entire episode. He weaves a narrative about Big Polly being found on a glacier as a child, so he must know something about the cold. And then Big Polly says if he has any advice for them, they should just let their body parts fall off as they freeze. And then DLH gives some bad information about hypothermia.
Polly is not able to do this tit for tat jokes with Dark Lord Harrison. I feel like Dark Lord Harrison was used to Fred Willard, who, you know, is a professional comedian, and Polly is just saying random shit. And it was fascinating. And for this reason, Big Polly was why.
Jorge Moreno, bystander of the week.
I didn't know that that was possible for him to be a Jorge Moreno.
Why
because
not?
He's part of the show. He's like DLH.
And Gita isn't part of the show?
No, they hired her for that episode, you know. Big Polly has worked on the show for fucking decade.
We've given it to producers. We gave it to two different producers when Claire was crowned.
That's true. All right. He's my
Jorge Moreno, bystander of the week.
Also,
give it to Big Polly. He needs it. Dark Lord Harrison is saying, how do you think this is going to affect Ivan's performance in the fantasy suite date tonight? Polly says, not good. It's a very, it's kind of like what we're doing. Sports ESPN evaluation of romantic plays.
Then they start synchronized breathing, and that supposedly makes it easier. We get an underwater shot of Ivan grabbing Tayshia's ass. And of course, they beat the record and keep going. They stay in the icy waters for well over a minute longer than they need to. They set the new record at 6 minutes 36 seconds. Big Polly and DLH present them with a trophy, and there's confetti that flies from the trees, I suppose.
Streamers from the trees. Gita is shooting the streamers all over them. That's what I like to picture happened.
And I know this is COVID. I know all of that. This is a fucking fantasy suite. These dates are supposed to be the most romantic of all dates in the entire season. This is when you're supposed to allow the couple to form the strongest romantic connection, the final bond that is going to ultimately make the lead's choice very hard and get their emotional levels up so high that when she dismisses one of them, it is nervous breakdown. That's what you're hoping for. That's what a producer's hoping for anyway, I should say. And here they've done the exact opposite. They've made Ivan participate in this thing that is foolish at best, not entertaining at all. It was just pointless. I couldn't believe they were doing this. And then it even gets fucking worse. This isn't the end of Ivan's fantasy suite date.
This is the beginning of Ivan's torture. Justice for Ivan. Portion 3 starts with the rec room again. Brendan says he's letting his mind drift off to something in order to distract himself. And Zach says, it's more trusting Tayshia to do what she needs to do to get clarity on who she wants to be her husband. And Zach gets the second fantasy suite date, which he celebrates with an ITM, an in-the-moment interview, where he does a Matthew McConaughey impression. All right, all right, all right. Colorful narrator.
And his date card says, let's explore each other. And he's happy about that. He says, I'll take it to Brendan. And Brendan ITMs that he's having trouble knowing she might be having an experience with another man. And then night falls on La Quinta and we get the back half of Ivan's fantasy suite. This is the insult added to the prior injury. He ITM loads that he is at LL3. They go to a little dinner table setup and they talk about how they broke the record and they can accomplish any goal they set their mind to. They can take over the world. That phrase is repeated again and again with them. And the producers were trying to use the ice bath as a method by which they could convey to us. That's their story. Together, they're like a power couple who can achieve these crazy goals, including sitting in an ice tub and kissing each other.
First bachelorette and ring winner to both be black.
Both be mixed.
Both be mixed.
Tayshia is African-American and Mexican. Ivan is black and Filipino.
Ivan then does this very fascinating conversation, which sort of led me to believe he might be in the pit. Ivan basically goes through a history of his love levels with Tayshia. He starts it by saying, the word love, it just means so much to me. He invokes a sacred word. And then he says that, you know, he's told her that he likes her, love level one. I know I've told you I've liked you, but I started falling in love with you a couple weeks ago, love level two, and it's more than that at this point. I am undoubtedly falling in love with you right now, love level three. He says, sorry, I haven't said it. I've sort of glossed over it. And Tayshia, love level three is back to him. I definitely have been falling for you too.
This was definitely my highlight of this date. And I agree with you. When he started saying this shit, I was like, this motherfucker's been listening to our podcast. To outline all three of those love levels like that, and A, to even understand that love level two exists. Most players don't. Most players use 1, 3, and 4. 2 is an exotic. It does get used. Here it got used tonight, obviously. But for him to go back through and to use the love levels as a map of the escalation of his feelings about her is fucking genius. And she even says in the beginning of this conversation that he was the first person she could break down a wall with. So even that gets brought back into this kind of little recounting of their history, the different plays basically that they've made and why he's there. This is kind of his highlight reel for her. And I don't know. I fucking loved it. I loved when he said this shit, especially when he brought in L2. Because like I said, you just don't get to see that very often. It's a rarity. And it's really a thing of beauty, because if more players knew about it and more players used it well, you can really lengthen your love level game. That gives you at least another week. Sometimes you can pull an extra 2 weeks out of that.
And it is a progression. You can say, I'm starting to fall in love with you, and then later be like, I'm falling in love with you. And it will have that impact because it is a different level. I thought this was excellently played. It was almost my play of the game. But...
me too.
There was... other plays to be made.
Yeah, there were. But then Tayshia produces the Fantasy Suite card. She hands it to him to read. This is a sacred rule in our beloved game. The lead never reads. The lead always passes the card to the player. The player is always the one who reads the sacred invocation of the sexual ceremony. Should you choose to forego your individual rooms, please use this key to stay as a couple in the Fantasy Suite. Signed, Chris Harrison. These are the exact words that have been emblazoned on every Fantasy Suite date card since season one. They will never change. It is like the fucking Ten Commandments carved into stone, and here we see it for the first time this season, proving that this is indeed a real season. Nothing counterfeit has happened to you. Whatever happened in the beginning, that shit's all over. This is a real Fantasy Suite sanctioned by the show. You hear the sacred fucking words. The invocation is read. And of course, Ivan accepts.
Ivan accepts. 100% yes. Great. You want unbridled enthusiasm in this moment. Says we can talk more. Uninterrupted time. And they walk 10 yards to the Fantasy Suite. And what is it? It's a fucking Airstream trailer.
It's an insult.
They are staying at a resort. The only thing that is worse than the hotel that they're staying at is this Airstream. It is worse even than the infamous Becca Kufrin, Ari Leyendijk Fantasy Suite, which was a twin size bed in a tent in the desert. I believe they were in Peru. I mean, at least the Airstream has a toilet, I guess. That's the only thing it has going for it. But it was tiny. Tayshia gives him a tour and tries to be like, look, there's a little nook we could have breakfast at. Just an absolute fucking nightmare.
That next morning, they're getting the fuck out of that thing as quick as they can to go sit outside and eat some fruit. But overall, the Fantasy Suite is, at least thematically, supposed to be about this couple having a moment to themselves where they can get lost in each other, where they can really build the romantic component of the relationship, the final component, really, before she has to make the big decision between the last two players.
There's often a jacuzzi in the hotel room.
Here, there's no jacuzzi. There's not even really room to move. yes, it's supposed to be cozy. It's supposed to be intimate, but it's not. It's just terrible. And I'm wondering, is there an air conditioner in there at least? Are they just in this fucking tin can sweltering in the summer heat? It was unbelievably bad. And like you're saying, they're at a fucking resort. Can't they just put them in the nicest suite like they fucking literally do with Zach in the next?
Yeah. Do literally just use Zach's and just like use different bedding. That would be better. They have like a boom boom room on Love Island. They call it the hideaway, and they literally just redress it to make it like, oh, there's a new color bedding and like different candles and stuff. They could have at least done that.
They could have done almost anything to make this better than this. It was just so bad. I felt bad for Ivan. I felt bad for Tayshia. And in some ways, it seemed almost like it was a punishment, or like they were purposely trying to sabotage this relationship, which obviously is a common strategy by producers, but usually not once it gets to fantasy suites. Or if they are trying to sabotage the relationship, it's not this overt. Usually it's through the mechanics of having other players be involved and there being some animosity or somebody's in a fight or something. This is just straight.
Bringing a skeleton, an ex-boyfriend.
Right. This was just straight, fuck you.
I mean, I agree.
Nonetheless, she ITMs that Ivan is everything to her. And the last shot of this fantasy suite night portion we get is her coming out, shutting the door, and the lights go out in the trailer, which is indicative of sex happening. We don't know if that's true, but that is at least what the show is conveying to us.
By the way, Ivan does a small little good move here when they have champagne and donuts, and Ivan tells her that his dad called him out and said, "Son, I think you're a step away from love." And he says, "Cheers to my dad for recognizing the real Ivan." I thought this was good on a few different levels. It's a prepared toast, and it's referring to him describing all the love levels again, and it's got that little touch of his father and the hometown date, which he knows that he nailed. His father has apparently Instagram fan pages already.
Do you think his dad listens to our podcast?
No, I'm pretty sure there's very few people in that age group who do, but maybe.
The next morning dawns with portion number 4. Ivan and Tayshia emerge from the forced confinement of the Airstream trailer to eat fruit outside the trailer. He ITMs that they stayed up all night talking and are both tired. He kisses her. He walks off into the early morning sun of La Quinta and comes into the common room. We are meant to believe that this is continuous action. He has just left Tayshia and is now just entering the common room, where he does a fist bump with all the guys, and he gives them some details about the dinner and the fantasy suite being fun and cool, and he tells them they did not sleep. He says that. We did not sleep. And the guys can take that to mean whatever they want, that they were talking all night, that they were having sex all night, whatever. But it is put out there. The information is given. They did not sleep. So we now know Tayshia has been 24 hours without sleep.
Brendan does an interesting little question here. He says, did you get time in the morning? Did you get a fantasy suite number 1 part 3? Yes, they did. We saw the sunrise, Ivan says. And he demands to know the verbiage from Zach's date card.
And Zach once again reprises, it says we're going to explore each other. I'll take it. Ha ha ha. Zach gives them each a handshake and a goodbye. And he's got a date to go on. He then leaves the room. Ivan has come in the room 1 minute prior from literally being on a date with Tayshia, as we're led to believe now. This is at least what's in the document. Zach then walks out of the room a minute later to go find Tayshia, now wearing different clothes, obviously, but still, we assume, has not slept. So are we now to believe that the producers are just keeping her on a 3-day cycle? Are these guys literally going back to back to back, minutes apart on their fantasy suite dates, and she gets no reprieve? That's what it seems like. That's what they're putting in the document for us. I don't know how they edited it. I don't know what the truth is. That is what this seems like. And in most other fantasy suite rounds, it doesn't seem like that. It seems like the lead gets a day, maybe, or at least half a day, you know, something, some buffer between them.
I bet she got an hour. I just think they're trying to, you know, I kind of assumed it was back-to-back days, even in normal production. So this didn't seem that weird to me, but.
I guess it seemed weirder to me, too, because Ivan says they didn't sleep. And now she's expected to go on another date immediately without any sleep. Isn't that incredibly detrimental to whatever that relationship is, whoever they're putting on that second date?
Yeah, but it's not detrimental to the production. It's positive if she's sleep deprived for them.
Of course. I'm not saying the production gives a shit about any of these people. They don't. They're trying to destroy them. This, to me, was just a very open way they were doing it. Usually they try to hide it a little bit so that it's not that heavy-handed. Here they're just like, wait a minute. They're sending her on a 72-hour sleepless extravaganza with guys back-to-back-to-back?
I mean, I think they should do it. I think they should do the handoff when she's at the balcony. Zach's walking up. Zach's walking up as Ivan is retreating.
You know what they should have?
Fist bump.
They should have a purple rose or something. Some kind of fantasy suite rose. And it's like when you're holding that, you're on the fantasy suite. And then you have to give it to the other guy and he takes it and goes on the fantasy suite.
Love it.
Oh, fuck. Portion 5 begins. Zach and Tayshia meet up. They kiss. Zach ITMs that he can't wait to explore. And he keeps saying the word explore. They go to the spa. They get in some robes. And they come out. And they start squirting paint all over each other and rolling around on a giant canvas. Now, this, of course, is another time-honored tradition that, once again, Carly Waddell and Evan Bass had this exact same date on their season of Paradise. Literally the same thing. Squirted paint on each other, rolled around on a canvas. I need
They're
both
just
canvases.
Recreating Evan and Carly's greatest moments this episode.
They fight with the paint. They lay in the paint. They imagine what their lives would be like together covered in paint. They shower off the paint. This is basically their
By the way, Zach reprises his prone game, reminiscing of his fountain play, and keeps laying Tayshia on the ground and making out with her. The chemistry is, you know, Zaxi might as well be called Zach Chemistry Game because he is killing it with these and he keeps putting her down on the ground. He will reprise it once again in the fantasy suite.
Portion 6 is that night. They go to a little dinner under a bell in the top of a building. Zach ITMs that she reconnected a wire in him and he's going to tell her how he feels. He tells her that when they first kissed, she said he was different and trouble, and he knew he had a shot because it takes someone to recognize that he is a little different. That's the only kind of person he could wind up with. She then says she has something she wanted to bring up with him. And the look on her face tells us it's serious and maybe not something good. And she brings up what his mom told her about him not wanting to have kids. And I gotta say, when I saw this obstacle pop up, I was like, fuck, is this it? Is he sunk? Is this the end of what was an amazing, super impressive fucking run through the game? No, it is not the end. It is simply one more thing for Zach to use to display his incredible game sense. He tells her that it was his walls game. He says, I had my walls up. I was just saying that to be a tough guy. I want to be single and never have kids. In reality, he does want kids. He wants a family. Those things don't scare him. And it's Tayshia who brought that out in him, who made him realize it, who put him back together again, who made him fucking whole. And then she says she feels like there's something else. And we know Tayshia is a master at pulling out the next thing. She did it with Ben on their one-on-one. Here, she gets Zach to open up a little more. And this was my
Play of the game.
It was also my
play of the game.
He takes her hands and he looks deep into her eyes, and we know what's coming. She doesn't know. She thinks maybe this will be something serious and bad, but no, not at all. He tells her he loves her, LL4. She LL4s him back, and then he does this brilliant fucking cherry on top where she says, I don't know, everything's so good with us, but I'm just trying to find things that are wrong. And he says, what if there's nothing wrong? And then he just fucking kisses her mid-sentence. He doesn't even let her protest.
Yes.
Fuck.
By the way, this love level 4 speech was exquisite. He says, I made a promise to myself when I came here to be honest, to be authentic for TRR, for the right reasons. This light you've turned on, I feel something very strong. I know that I love you. I love your smile, your strength. I love the human being you are. I think it's important for you to know that. It was just... And her reaction to it in her ITM is exactly perfect. She says that what feels the best about it is the sincerity, the 4TRR, the way he says it is so intentional, natural, organic. He conveys this to her in a way that she believes. And she fucking love level 4s on the spot back to him. You don't get a better love level 4 than when you get a love level 4 back, especially fantasy suites when there's still 3 people left.
It was the best play of the game, obviously. I mean, that's why it's both of our plays of the game. This shit was
Have I convinced
masterful. Well, the thing that is interesting about it, too, is, you know, Ivan made a good play. Certainly. He did his history of love levels, and he gets up to love level 3. What he doesn't know at this point, Zach was at love level 3 2 fucking weeks ago. You're outgamed here. You're playing a game that's 2 weeks old. The same night, or at least the same 24-hour period that you level 3'd, he's level 4-ing. He's always a step ahead. You're basically fucked. Now, the danger in doing what Zach did, and we'll see how it bears out, is that you don't have anywhere to go from here. There isn't really a level 5. We have joked about one, but there isn't really one.
Our joke about it is one that PP did, where he said, my love for you is... doesn't even exist. It's beyond all space and time or something.
Yeah. That's still technically a level 4, but it's a level 5. Only PP can do a level 5. It's the cringe level. Here, Zach might have burned out too fast. We'll see what happens. I was going to say next week, but we'll see what happens tomorrow night.
If I have an LL4s.
Yeah, if Ivan LL4s, that might carry more weight now because Zach's going to have to do something to potentially counteract that, unless she's already made up her mind, which is obviously possible as well.
I bet we're going to see Zach attempt a level 5. That doesn't work. He's going to kiss her. He's going to force her down onto the ground at the final rose pedestal. We're going to see our first prone game at the pedestal.
I'm ready for that. I am very ready for first prone at the pedestal. First prone pedestal?
Yeah, first prone pedestal. Prone pedestal.
If only PP would have done a prone pedestal. Then they go to the fantasy suite, and their fantasy suite is not an Airstream trailer. Their fantasy suite is what looks like a fucking private home.
It's in a building. It's indoors.
It has multiple stories, a well-made bed, bathrooms. There's all kinds of shit. They lay on the bed and kiss, and the lights go out in this room. And again, this is conveying to us that they are consummating this relationship.
An implied consummation. And there's some weird filming going on during this. Did you notice this? They focus on Tayshia's lower legs kicking up when they make out on the bed. And then they zoom in on her foot again. It is very strange. And I think it's supposed to be like, oh, people's legs kick up when they're kissing people when they're like so in love over the moon.
There was some other weird filming that we'll get to later when Ben returns as well that I noted. But yes, there were a lot of things, subtle things in this that you have to really be paying attention for in this episode of Fantasy Suites. That are like, what the fuck are they doing here? Why is there a camera person there? Why are they even including this in the edit? And that was one for me, certainly. These weird shots of, even when they were doing the ice bath, why did they have a camera under the ice to shoot basically Tayshia's ass? Like, that's the only thing you're getting out of that shot.
Artsy?
I guess. There's some weird choices. And then even after they get the footage back, they choose to include it in the show. That's also strange. At any rate, portion 7 begins the next morning. Zach and Tayshia wake up and they dance in the bed, and Zach is ITMing that he never dances in a bed. She just makes him so happy. And
he has like energetic pastor camp counselor vibes here, making her jump on the bed. I'm like, this is exhausting.
Couldn't agree more. They kiss, they make breakfast, they drink coffee.
He's wearing Tayshia's robe. Clothes play. I think he played this morning portion very well. They're jumping on the bed. He's wearing Tayshia's robe. And he lifts her, puts her down on the bed. Prone. Prone play. Strikes again. Tayshia says, you're trouble.
They make breakfast. They drink some coffee. He ITMs that he's going to try to keep making her feel like the most desired person in the world for a very, very long time. And he tells her that he hasn't felt this way in a while. He LL4s her again. And she demands to hear it again, and he does. She does not say it back here. Maybe she did, and they didn't include it in the edit, but we never see it in the document. So that's either her choosing not to return it, or the producers choosing not to return it, because maybe it would make it too obvious.
Tonnage.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Exactly. And she once again says that he's so intentional, and there's so much meaning behind it when he says it to her. And she ITMs that she's about to have to say some hard goodbyes. Zach returns to the guys in the common room. They sit in awkward silence until they all kind of laugh through the strangeness of the situation. And Zach tells them that it was a good day and they created art. That's what the exploring each other was about. And it wasn't easy to leave. And then Brendan leaves for his date, which apparently, again, is happening seconds after Zach has returned from his.
We start Brendan's fantasy suite date. We see a little bird. It's been chirping at the grass a little bit, representing Brendan, an odd little bird. And this was my creature of the week.
I forgot the creature.
It won over the hummingbird that we see in the opening shot. Am I losing it?
No, I should have been more on my game. I apologize. I'm going to put Creature of the Week is a thing we should do. I'm doing it starting next
week.
Great.
Brendan is again loading that he has these walls about proposing. He meets up with Tayshia. She says, I want you to meet my friend. And then she ITMs that Brendan is the first guy she started falling in love with, love level 2, after their first one-on-one date. And then Tayshia and Brendan enter a room where Neil Lane, Sparkler King, is playing the piano, doing a little talent show.
He's pretending to play the piano. He can't actually play. He also pretends to kind of be surprised by them when they come in. Oh, hi. I was just happened to be in La Quinta playing a piano, as I do. I didn't even know they were shooting a show here. How are you guys doing? It was just so stupid, the whole tone of
this.
The
quarantine element like takes away from all of these surprises, because nothing can be a surprise. They have to quarantine.
But nonetheless, we are going to get here the biggest segment of screen time the demon Neil Lane has ever enjoyed in our beloved game in one shot. This was incredible to me. I really enjoyed seeing him, getting to
Good
watch his mannerisms. So she introduces Brendan to Neil Lane. Brendan has no fucking idea who the man is. I found that very interesting. So that means he's at the very least only seen a couple of seasons and never clocked that this guy was repeating, or he's never seen at least the end of a season.
Clues.
Yeah.
I think even if you watch this show regularly, you might not know who Neil Lane is.
His fucking name is in every ring box. The money shot of the entire season.
I know, but from his face?
Come on. Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm just like, sometimes I do feel like we are a little, you know, as two people who are maybe the most consumed by the show of all people on planet Earth, maybe we assume that viewers of the show would know who he is.
I don't know.
He's not seeing the ring. I think if he saw the ring first, maybe that would associate faster. I don't know. Just maybe. Devil's advocate. DLH's advocate here.
I think Neil Lane is probably second only to DLH in terms of repeated screen time of a show person, you know?
What about Sean Lowe?
Neil Lane has him crushed.
Oh.
Neil Lane was doing this fucking 6 or 7 years before Sean Lowe ever was on the show.
Yeah, but he's only in like a few minutes. I don't know. I also, Brendan, you know, he's a little bird.
Understood. At any rate, Tayshia has to explain to Brendan who Neil Lane is, and Brendan says, oh, the diamond guy. And he's like, well, I do the rings for the show. He's not just a diamond guy. Neil Lane makes sure we know that. He does the rings for the show.
And Neil Lane gives himself some more credentials here. Says, I go to some of the reunions. I'm friends with Sean and Catherine. Loved that line.
But before they get to that conversation, Tayshia ITMs that Neil is a really important part of the show. I agree. And Neil Lane puts a bunch of diamonds on her wrists and her fingers, and he forces them to look at wedding bands. And Neil Lane explains 1,000 fucking times that his rings are handmade, not machine made. These are handmade, handmade, handmade. He just keeps repeating it. And this is a infomercial basically for Neil Lane rings. This whole thing. It's crazy.
Totally. And they purposely put Brendan specifically on this date to fuck with him.
Of course. Brendan ITMs that it's scaring him to look at the rings because he's been here before and marriage means so much and blah, 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 blah. And then they go and they sit with Neil Lane. And we get Neil Lane now playing the role of DLH, essentially, and I might say, doing it better than JoJo. He sits down and gets them to kind of talk about their feelings toward each other, their relationship. And this is where he talks about all the famous Bachelor people that he knows and who has kids and who he's put fucking rings on their fingers and shit.
It was a beautiful tribute to the Sparkler Man. I enjoyed it. It's kind of, you know, they're highlighting Pauly, they're highlighting Neil Lane, it's kind of a nostalgia episode. We've now gotten the day portions of all the Fantasy Suite dates. Date one, physical torture. Date two, sex and paint. Date three, emotional torture. Not the usual vibe for Fantasy Suites. Usually people, they go on a boat, they go to a nice island. There's jacuzzis and champagne and chocolate wherever they go. And not the same vibe here.
And Tayshia is now going into her 68th hour of being awake. And night falls. They go to dinner at a little table set up by a tree with a bunch of lights hanging from it. And I clocked this. I don't know if this is true or not, but to me it looked like this. It looked like the exact same spot where Claire yelled at Yosef, now redressed for this romantic setting. And she says that she's going to be honest. She feels like they had a connection on the first one-on-one, and she could see herself marrying him at the end of this, but she feels like she's been lost because she doesn't know where he is. And this is the tone that sets up the rest of this dinner. He says he agrees with her as far as the first moment they had together. He tells her that the date that day reinforced the gravity of the moment. The ring is a big deal to him, and he says the past few days and weeks have been challenging. He knew he was ready coming into this, that he wants a wife and kids and family more than anything, but there's still a big part of him that is broken, and he still needs time to heal. There's a big part of him that needs to grow because he needs to pick up some pieces. And as much as he wants to be the guy to give her his heart is not whole. This was my
error of the game.
Of course, this was also my
error of the game.
I am devastated because I thought he was going to be the ring winner, and I like to be right. But this was such a bizarre move, and it's just, if you are going to exit the game, you gotta set up a better storyline than this. Oh, you know, I thought I was into it, but actually I'm not ready. It's like clear that he like wasted her time. She could have kept around people that might have been ready, etc. It just, he doesn't come off well from this.
Well, what was the catalyst for him to finally come to this realization? Seeing the rings? Was it Neil Lane's pretend piano playing?
It was the piano.
He had to have known this going into this date. He had to have known he wanted out. And so I don't know if it was the producers having conversations with him and they were like, we'll let you get out of it here. We'll give you this ring thing. I don't know what the construction of this was, but the way he ultimately played it was terrible. Absolutely terrible. It's kind of an easy wishy-washy out. It's not a dramatic moment. She says, you know, if I was younger, I'd be pissed off, but I understand it. I've been through what you've been through, and let me walk you out. And that's basically it. He's not setting himself up really for paradise, other than he made it to the top three, which is kind of a, if you're in that top three, it's kind of a guaranteed, at least in the conversation, but he's not setting himself up with any good storyline here. The I'm still heartbroken over my divorce is like, then why'd you come on the show, dude? In some ways, it's an insult to the game. Certainly, this play is an insult to the fucking game. Like, it doesn't matter how you feel at this point, dude. You got to stick in it. You never take yourself out. One of the basic fundamental rules, never take yourself out. Go out in a blaze of glory, if anything. Just terrible. Terrible fucking move.
He kind of tries to save it with this conversation in the auto zone, which is the area next to the car as you're exiting. And says, I wish you every amazing thing that life has to offer. And he does an STCO, shoulder to cry on. And Tayshia cries into his shoulder. She ITMs that he's the one who made me put my walls down. I just felt like safe with him. And I'm wondering, was this her pick? Was this her ring winner?
Totally could
have. He says, God bless you, okay. Religious invocation on the way out.
Yeah, he totally could have been her ring winner. We'll never know at this point unless she reveals it later in a tell-all book. But that's it. Brendan is out of here, and portion number 10 begins. The next day, Tayshia sits in her kitchen area. No pastries, no donuts this time, but there is a full wooden board of fruit, delicious fruit, enough for 5 to 10 people to comfortably eat. And there is a knock at the door. She goes to answer it. And we have the second Council of Crowns this episode. It's Bachelorette Rachel Lindsay. She walks in and asks Tayshia if she got the clarity she needed from the fantasy suites. Interestingly, about this entire conversation, Rachel sent in with a mission. The producers have told her, we need you to get her to talk about Ben because we're bringing him back. And Rachel fucking delivers.
Rachel is already a million times better than JoJo just in this conversation. And side note, she is wearing braids, which I can't remember where I read this, but I think she said that she had to change her hair for some bachelor wedding or something that she was being brought back for. They didn't want her to have braids. So I thought that was a nice little detail.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that. But yeah, I totally agree. Rachel Lindsay's a fucking pro. She's like, I'm hosting Extra. I got 100 fucking podcasts. You want me to do what? Just go in and have her say something with Ben? Yeah, I can get that done. And she comes in, has this fucking conversation, and she's like, well, you know, at this point, you start thinking back about some of the guys you regret sending home. Is there anybody like that for you? And she's like, yeah, actually, this guy, Ben. And she's done it. Rachel's done her job. They wrap it up, and we now get this little hint that, oh shit, Ben is a storyline again. We see Ivan getting ready for the rose ceremony in his ITM. He is forced by the producers to say once again, we can take over the world. That is now their story as a couple. Zach gets ready for the rose ceremony. And in his ITM, he again says how much he LL4s her. And then Ben emerges in the La Quinta grounds. He's just walking around and he walks up to a door and knocks on it. We don't know if it's Tayshia's. Turns out it ain't. This is the same door that Ed Wastebrot accidentally knocked on weeks ago. This is the home of the Dark Lord.
All of these door misleads. Dark Lord Harrison, by the way, pretends to be surprised here as if he would open the door for a stranger who hasn't been quarantining. The acting here is unbelievable.
Oh, is that Ben? Ben, what are you doing here? I thought we sent you home. All of this is so stupid. They should have just had the scene open with Ben sitting across from DLH. They should have started it, by the way, on DLH's face and had him be like, are you sure you want to do this? That should have been your cliffhanger, not Ben walking through La Quinta. It should have been DLH saying to someone that we don't see, are you sure you want to do this? Then we come back from commercial and it's Ben saying, yes, I have to tell her that I love her, blah, blah, blah. Instead, they don't. They do this just fucking pure shit version. I'm telling you, the producers, I don't know if it's because of the quarantine or what, the producers on this season, not good. I don't know if they got new ones. I don't know if it's old ones who are just tired, or again, they don't understand the circumstance. But even just in the editing and the construction of these scenes, they are not getting maximum dramatic value out of any of them. They're just shitting them out. And it feels in some ways like they are shitting them out. Like they're like, fuck it, we just have to fill time until Matt James season. I don't know, but didn't come across well. But of course, DLH talks to Ben, and Ben tells him he loves Tayshia, and it didn't end well. It felt weird, and he wants the chance to talk to her to tell her how he feels.
And more dragging out of this resurrection, he goes and sits by the pool. No sense of urgency here. Oh, he has to wait until Tayshia is about to do rose ceremony. Portion 11, Tayshia's prepping for Rose, and we finally get the Ben knock-knock. And he keeps having to ask her questions, trying to get to this couch. He's like, can I come in, please? She's like, of course. He's like, can we go in? She's like, yeah. And he's like, can we sit? She's like, yeah. Here's my resurrection couch. Love before me now. But he does this long speech. Says, I know I'm supposed to be gone. You sent me home already. I was caught off guard. I didn't know what the fuck just happened. The feelings that I've had for you, I've been describing this entire time. I didn't know what it was, but I'm in love with you. Love, level 4. I have been in love with you. Now I'm starting to get nervous. I blew it by not telling you in the moment. I've never had this feeling, so I was just terrified, but I am in love with you. Like the life we could have together, that thought keeps me awake at night. I don't even know what I'm doing. I couldn't leave. I had to tell you. Like, I see a life with you. Tayshia says, hold on a second. She clasps her face. Ben is like, are you all right? She's like, no, I'm not all right. He says, come here. He holds her hand. Good move. Tayshia says, I'm going to need a minute, and goes in the other room to talk to a producer. Says, I don't know what to do. Producer says, it's up to you. And Tayshia says, there's a rose ceremony. What do I do with that?
This conversation had one of those strange shots in it that I was talking about earlier. They're in her living room, essentially, on this couch, talking. Many of the shots are taken by camera people standing inches from them, just on the other side of the coffee table. Mm-hmm. They cut in one shot one time that is taken from outside the building through the fucking window, through the blinds, as though it is some weird voyeuristic peeping Tom, like a Bennett waiting in the bushes, watching them through the fucking window. I don't understand the purpose of that shot. It doesn't give you any new visual information, and you can still hear them. They're using the audio from the mics inside, so it's not like they're even giving you a, we can't see what they're saying. You hear them talking. It was just a very weird choice, but one of the things that I really took away from this conversation is he says he knows he's supposed to be long gone because she sent him home already. Absolutely correct. Why aren't you? Oh, because as soon as you got dumped, the producers were like, we're going to put you back in the game in a week. So go in your room, have fun, whatever. We'll let you out at midnight to do some night jogs after everybody else is locked in their rooms. The producers have orchestrated all of this. None of this is his choice. He's now playing their game in the hopes that this will get him a crown or a paradise high sand.
I mean, he definitely has a choice. I like, because we see a promo where they are kissing, I almost gave this my play of the game, but then I was like, it is so much a producerial thing. So
it's 100% producers. He can do none of this without them.
Yeah, but he delivered it pretty well.
Yeah, he's a good player. I'm not knocking him for that. But when he gets eliminated by her, that's it. You're going home, right? No. A producer then tells you, hey, you don't have to go home. There is another thing you can do here. What do you mean? Well, we can bring you back. You can tell her you love her. If you really love her, you should. Like, she should know how you feel, right? What if she feels the same way and she was just waiting for you to say it first? They plant all those ideas in his head, and then he comes out and literally says all of that to DLH. They give you the dialogue. All you have to do is deliver it. And he did it pretty well. But again, this is all scripted.
I mean, I think he definitely like planned out what he was going to say.
With the help of producers. How much ITM footage do you think there is of them talking him through this? Fucking hours worth at least. Conversation in the back of the car with the producer as he's leaving. I fucked up. I should have said it. And they're like, well, maybe you still can. What do you mean? She just dumped me. Well, look, we can do anything. We control the entire game. We can put you back in it. That's what's happened here for sure. But that was it. That was the end of the worst fantasy suites following the worst hometowns we've ever seen.
And we get a tag. Tayshia and Zach apparently had some portrait painting time before they did the body painting. And Zach is doing some more jokes. Needs help. Can't paint a circle. And Tayshia's like, what's my favorite color? I just said it. He says, I missed it. I was thinking about myself, which I thought was funny.
Yeah, he got a little joke
I
moment.
I feel like he's definitely going to win.
He's been my pick for a while. I think he is going to. But I don't know. This season to me is so far, or we got one episode left, and I feel like this season, it is so strange. I just have never experienced something like it because there's so much in it that is good and progressive and really, I think, pushing the entire franchise forward. And there's so much in it that is just technically the worst I've ever seen. This is even worse than like some of those early Bachelor seasons where they didn't know what the fuck they were doing, where they had them like eating dinner on an aircraft carrier and shit and the wind's whipping around. It's fucking like minus 10 degrees.
I know. They keep having scenes next to the fountain and you can barely hear the audio. We cannot emphasize enough how much more progressive this is than previous seasons. We have just watched, well, not Bachelorette, but all Bachelor, and there aren't conversations like this before.
Never.
Minimal discussion of PTCs. Never humanizing these human issues.
And even some of the gameplay this season has been revolutionary. Dale Moss, I'm talking about specifically. He's the IG champion of this season. And obviously a ring winner of this season. And really wrecked the game in a way that we've never fucking seen before. And may never see again. So there is some kind of valuable gameplay to take away from it, but it really is, it's the production of it that is terrible.
And by the way, we are going to be getting into our top 10 takeaways from this season on our next Patreon episode that will come out on Monday.
Yeah, because there were a lot of things here that are, I mean, beyond historic. I really do think they are cornerstones of, fuck, dare I say it, the next era of the game.
Well, I mean, we'll have to see.
Time will tell.
But this is an anomaly.
Yeah. But thank you, everyone, for joining us for our coverage of the second round of playoffs, Fantasy Suites, this week. We will be back tomorrow night with coverage of the finale. And thank you again for all the tids that are being sent my way. There were some delicious tids all day long about the Leyendyke twins. We will be discussing those tids and many others on our Friday show this week in Bachelor Nation.
And now it's time for me to give Clues your Christmas present.
Okay. Thank you. I'm ready.
This is, you know, we've been doing the power binge and we have divided the seasons into eras. First two eras, classic era seasons 1 through 3, experimental era season 4 through 12. This is an ode to the classic and experimental eras.
All right.
On the first day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me Alex Michelle in an oversized suit. On the second day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me 2 Aaron Bwergis and Michelle in an oversized suit. On the third day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis and Michelle in an oversized suit. On the fourth day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me 4 Laughing Guineas, 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis and Michelle in an oversized suit. On the fifth day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me 5 J Palmers, 4 Laughing Guineas, 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis and Michelle in an oversized suit.
Oh my fuck.
On the sixth day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me 6 Byron's Efficient, 5 J Palmers, 4 Laughing Guineas, 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis and Michelle in an oversized suit. On the seventh day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me 7 Charlie's Jokin', 6 Byron's Fishin', 5 Day Palmers, 4 Laughing Guineas, 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis, and Michelle in an oversized suit. On the eighth day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me 8 Storks a Dockin', 7 Charlie's Jokin', 6 Byron's Fishin', 5 J Palmers, 4 Laughing Guineas, 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis, and Michelle in an oversized suit. Shit. There's a couple more.
All right.
On the ninth day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me 9 Chow Borghese's, 8 Storks a Dockin', 7 Charlie's Jokin', 6 Byron's Fishin', 5 J Palmers, 4 Laughing Guineas, 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis and Michelle in an oversized suit. I should have made sure my music lined up with the whole song. On the 10th day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me 10 Navy Andys, 9 Chow Borghese's, 8 Storks a Dockin', 7 Charlie's Jokin', 6 Byron's Fishin', 5 J Palmers, 4 Laughing Guineas, 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis, and Michelle in an oversized suit.
This is fucking crazy.
On the 11th day of Pitmas, DLH said to me 11 Womack's first try, 10 Navy Andys, 9 Chow Borghese's, 8 Storks a Dockin', 7 Charlie's Jokin', 6 Byron's Fishin', 5 J Palmers, 4 Laughing Guineas, 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis, and Michelle in an oversized suit. On the 12th day of Pitmas, DLH sent to me Matt Grant's London Monkey, 11 Womack's first try, 10 Baby Andy's, 9 Chow Borghese's, 8 monkey. Storks a Dockin', 7 Charlie's Jokin', 6 Byron's Fishin', 5 J Palmers, 4 Laughing Guineas, 3 Firestones, 2 Aaron Bwergis, and Michelle in an oversized suit.
That was incredible.
I really...
the best Christmas present I've ever received. Thank you very much. Fuck. 4 Laughing Guineas. That was probably my favorite line in it. That's
yeah.
Oh, God damn. I don't know. Matt Grant's monkey is pretty good, too. That was astounding. I hope everyone else out there enjoyed that as much as I did. Jesus fucking Christ.
They're like, who are all those people?
Those are your first 12 bachelors in a row.
First 12 bachelors. I really should have practiced that song, but anyway, Merry Christmas, Clues.
Merry Christmas. We made it to another one, and hopefully 1,000 more to come. Before we go, what's that dwab at?
It has been 6,847 days without a Black Bachelor. Praise be Lord Harrison.
Please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then please rate this podcast. Please review this podcast. Please get a friend to listen to us, and then.
We're almost through the second month of this year, but that doesn't mean that you should forget about those New Year's resolutions, your new goals, especially your skincare goals. Small, easy changes in your routine can have amazing results. And your secret weapon should be Dime Beauty. I've been using this stuff. Look at me. Look at my face, Pace Case.
You're glowing.
How young do I look? Tell me. Tell me the number.
That's a Pace Case glow. You look like a little baby.
Thank you. That's the look I'm going for. And I put the stuff on at night, Dime's eye cream. And then they have a dewy day cream that I also use. And this is the result.
I've literally never used a moisturizer before. Mm-hmm. I've always had oily skin, but now it's getting to that time. And I made one of my New Year's resolutions to be to do my skincare routine. And I'm using the dewy day cream in the morning. I keep it on the left. Using the restorative night cream, I keep it on the right. It's bim, bam, boom. I know which one to use. And now my face is moisturized all the time. And it's so nice.
You look like a baby as well.
Thank you. I was waiting for it. A little slow. But this takes the guesswork out of the routine. So this is part of the work system, the two moisturizers. There's also a sold out retinol alternative, the TBT cream. I can't wait to try that one as well. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally all 5 stars.
This year, love your skin again. Go to dimebeautyco.com now and unlock your discount. That's dimebeautyco.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.